My work is to unjustify people, to help them see, yes, those things hurt. Yes, your spouse did that and that was not good. But who are you in this? How have you participated in the marriage to be what it is? How are you going to take deeper responsibility for your life, even if in some cases it means leaving this marriage, but to help people get more deeply rooted into their own conscience, their own integrity, and their own agency to live in a way that they can back up internally.
Welcome to Conversations with Dr. Jennifer, a collection of interviews on the topics of relationships, sexuality, spirituality, and more, all featuring Dr. Finlayson Fife.
Hi, everyone. Dr. Jennifer here. So often when we confront conflict, pain, and struggle in our marriages, we feel like something is going wrong. And yet, in my work as a marriage therapist and coach, I understand these as moments of collision that pressure our growth if we will let them. My new book, That We Might Have Joy, looks at the ways that we have often misunderstood our theology and created a more problematic relationship to our sexuality and to marital intimacy. And this book is my attempt to help Latter-day Saints understand the richness of our theology, how we can understand the pressures and struggles of marriage to be an invitation into our growth, to become more capable of intimacy and more capable of love. So if you click on the link in the show notes, you can find a purchase link for this new book, That We Might Have Joy. Thanks, everyone.
Welcome, friends. You are in for a real treat today. I have a truly special guest for you. Dr. Jennifer Finlayson Fife is here with me to talk about sexuality in midlife and that intimate relationship between husband and wife and how we make it better. But first, let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Jennifer. Well, Jennifer is an LDS relationship and sexuality coach with a PhD in counseling psychology. She is the author of a brand new book, which I'm so looking forward to. It's called That We Might Have Joy. It discusses all the things that around desire and divinity and intimate love. It's going to be so, so good. I'm looking so forward to it. She's someone that I've wanted to have on the podcast for a long time now. She's an absolute wealth of information in the field of sexuality and human relationships. And I believe that is such an important part of a healthy and loving marriage, such a gift from our Maker. Thank you so much for joining me. Welcome to Happy in the Middle, Dr. Jennifer. Yeah. So happy to have you.
Thank you. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah. So my audience is mostly Christian women in midlife who are going through all the challenges that that transition brings, from having a house full to have an empty nest. But today I specifically want to talk about the change in our sexual relationship and how we can create a better connection, a better life, a better quality of life, greater life satisfaction with our spouse when we deal with this shift in a positive way. So we have lots of differences happening, changes in our hormones, changes in desire. We're maybe feeling disconnected after giving all of our attention to other things, to kids and schedules and all the things, and letting everyone and everything else come first. And so perhaps we can start by just asking the question. I have a lot of clients that after many years of that neglect and maybe even avoidance, like they don't want to confront that part of their lives. And it's really easy to excuse away when you're so busy and tired with the kids and things.
Yes.
And they've grown apart, maybe emotionally, spiritually as well.
Mm-hmm.
What is the first step? How do we go about reconnecting? I know this is a very scary proposition for a lot of people because maybe they haven't been intimate in months or even years, but they're saying, I would actually like to incorporate this. I want to pressure myself a little bit more to be more honest about who I am and what I want. And I maybe denied myself sexual pleasure for lots of reasons. Probably a lot of resentment too, but what's that first step? How do we re-engage?
There's maybe even a lot, even just to that idea, but I think that there are some gifts that come with this transition because as you say, a lot of times when, as women, we are in the thick of parenting, when we are pre-menopausal, like when we are in that normal reproductive stage,
we actually produce more estrogen and so on. And it tends to make us a little more accommodating, a little more attuned to what everyone wants from us, because that's good for parenting. It's good for children to have that skill. But a lot of times women feel like they've given away too much of themselves. They are being taken for granted. They have related to sex sometimes as something you do for a spouse or just to kind of manage his feelings or needs or whatever. And so when you get to that transition, when kids have left the home, maybe you are perimenopausal or menopausal, there is the gift actually of less estrogen. And while that can have some effects on us reproductively or like how comfortable sex can be and so on, what it can also do, it's both like an awakening more into ourselves that many women experience. And so women often feel more able in some ways to stand up for their desires, to speak more honestly and openly about what they want, to kind of confront their marriage and their lives and their choices at a different level. And this can be hard. It can be disorienting. It can really bring up questions about the marriage itself. Do, you know, am I happy here? Who are we? Are we a couple? You know, we've been co-parents. Are we still an intimate pair? And that can all be challenging, but it also can be highly valuable. So that is, it's fertile ground to create something better, something stronger, something more mature. And so if you are a woman who is clear that you want to reengage in a different way, you want to create something more mutual, something truer to yourself, I mean, I would say that's the most important piece actually in this. Secondarily, it's how do you communicate to your spouse about it? Mm-hmm. But it's getting clear that I want something also here, or I want something better in the marriage, because it's bringing more self into the marriage, which actually makes it very possible for it to be happier for you, for sex to be better for you. And there is something to get worked out with your spouse. There's more honest conversations that probably need to happen to cultivate a marriage around who you both are now in this stage of life. But I think the simple answer is to express that desire. I mean, to say, I want a better sexual an intimate relationship with you. I am facing my life and the two of us, and I see ways that we've done very well. I see ways that we have neglected the marriage, and I'd like to focus on it again. I want something better with you. And it's a way of saying it that doesn't obligate you, like, let's have sex tonight, even though it feels awkward or strange. And I don't think that's necessarily the right way to go about it. It could be for some. I mean, it could be, I just wanted to come back at this again and see where we are. But it might just be saying, I want to sort of think about our sexual relationship, or I want to talk about it, or talk about what's worked well and what hasn't worked well, or what I wish were different. And just beginning, not in a frame of critique or self-justification, but more bringing what you do know about what you want, bringing what you do know about what you don't want, to start a conversation about, I'd like to find my way back to us. Because probably your spouse feels the same way. And they're going to have a different perspective, but they probably would take some relief in hearing you name that.
Yeah, I find that it takes so much courage to actually be the one to raise your hand and say, you know what?
Yes.
Happy with this marriage, but I don't want another marriage. I just want this marriage to be better. I want this marriage to be different. Yes. And it is actually what happened with me in my own marriage. And it was a difficult thing. And it does take some courage to be the one to initiate that conversation to say, you know, this is not working for me anymore. I would like a change.
Yes.
And I love that in midlife, that opportunity where we are not so focused on everybody else does give us that huge opportunity to say, what do I really want? Who yes. do I want to be in the relationship?
Yes. Yes.
So many of my clients have grown up in very conservative cultures. Yes. Sex was saved for marriage, right? And because of that, yes, there was this pressure always to sort of take care of the man's needs because he's not going outside of the marriage for sexual intimacy. Mm-hmm. And that sort of meaning, even if we don't like the meaning, is one we hold on to even well after a time when it's, I mean, number one, it's not true, but we don't know that. And then it seems like we build this resentment and we're, we kind of blame the man for this framing, mm-hmm. for this meaning. So yeah. how do we shift in our own brains and yes. take accountability for the buy-in of that framing?
Yeah. 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 Well, I do talk about this a little bit in the book, which is, you know, I tell a lot of stories and teach the principles through stories. But, you know, one of the characters, I talk about the fact that she took a certain amount of comfort in the idea. Like, even though she did not, it kind of killed all desire to say, never say no to your husband. There was also a kind of implicit distance in it. If I'm just being the long-suffering one, if I'm just doing what I need to do, like I do with my children, right? Mm-hmm. There's a certain kind of inflation of ourselves without having to actually show up and bring more of our full selves to an intimate encounter, or to really let our spouse know that they matter to us, or invest in creating something with them. That just takes a lot more exposure. Like you said, Jane, it's hard to go in and say, I want something better because it's exposed. It's not just a resentful accommodation of them. You're actually saying, I miss you or I miss us. I want something different without any guarantee of reciprocation or knowing what they're going to say in return. So we tend to move into our relationships in a self-protective way and we just do it instinctively. But then we reap what we sow. We end up inviting caution on their side as well. And so a lot of times we find it easier to relate to sex as a job to do, as something that's about men, not about ourselves, also because we may have anxiety about our own pleasure. We may feel uncomfortable with the fact of our eroticism or sexual interest. And so it's easy to just deny that or put it to the side. Because we're not clear that it's a good thing or that it's a part of ourselves we can really accept. And so we often do collude in that meaning. And that meaning is not only bad for women, it's bad for men too, because men at best feel kind of accommodated or tolerated, but not desired or chosen or, hey, you're my friend. Yeah. Like, I like you and I want to be close to you. I'll just say one more thing. When women marry men, it's ripe for conflict because, and sexual conflict even, because men and women relate to sex in different and valid ways. And so that's the other reason why I'll just kind of roll my eyes and put up with you is much easier on the face of it than, okay, but that isn't sex that feels desirable to me, or this is what I want. Like to actually build a bridge across those differences, to know ourselves enough to know what it is that we do desire. I mean, that's one challenge, but then how do we actually think about that and cultivate something that feels good to both of us? That's harder. And so it's very easy to just resent the validation and reinforcement we don't get in marriage than to go in and roll up our sleeves and figure out how do we do this in a way that we both feel good about.
Yeah. And that's the work, right? To pressure ourselves to actually become who we are born to be. You know, I mean, you mention often that women are built for sexual capacity, that we are built for yes. pleasure. Yes. And yet so many of us cheat ourselves out of it because of that framing that it's just for the man.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. If you had to say who has more sexual capacity, men or women, I would say women, women, but women are pickier. And the other thing is that men, because of testosterone, tend to feel desire more spontaneously. They're just going through their day and they're like, sex, you know, I'd really like to have sex. Okay. Women, it's more like a computer screen. It goes into sleep mode pretty easily. And that's not because women aren't sexual, but they're taking care of kids. They're in a different mode. They're not getting you know, sex isn't imposing itself onto their mind in the same way. And that's okay. That doesn't mean women have less sexual capacity. They're just not, they don't have testosterone that's forcing the idea like men often have. Mm-hmm. And so, but women can find a path to their eroticism and their sexual feelings, especially when they feel like this is a good place to bring myself, especially when they feel like it's okay for me to have sexual pleasure. It's okay for me to think sexual thoughts. It's okay for me to enjoy going to this space with my spouse, that it's a kind of, it's a form of grown-up play. Mm-hmm. But that's often to know ourselves and to cultivate a relationship with ourselves in a way that we often learn as women not to do, or we feel afraid to do. And so, but that's not about not having sexual capacity. Women absolutely have sexual capacity, and women care more about the quality of the sexual relationship. Men maybe more about the quantity. Both are legitimate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's resentment on both sides. I mean, because I can see how a man, when he knows he's being accommodated, yeah, he's settling for this less than ideal relationship just because of that need, per se, you know. Mm-hmm. And so how does a woman explain to her spouse these differences without feeling that they're in that one down position where I'm less than because I don't think about the sex the same way that you do?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or one up, you know, or you're constantly thinking about it.
You're user. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Well, I think because first of all, when we fall in love, we tend to be drawn to difference, right? And so, you know, that's just kind of normal for a marriage, is that you're going to have differences that are fundamental to the conversations, right? Introverts tend to marry extroverts, and organized people tend to marry more spontaneous people. And then you're like, what is the matter with you? and so if we can just, first of all, say, like, of course there's differences. You know, I'm a woman, I married a man, or vice versa. So, like, I don't need to apologize for differences. We just have to think about how to make choices in the face of these differences. My husband didn't want to marry another man, right? I didn't want to marry another woman. Like, it is the difference that drives the interest here. So don't resent it. And also don't make one less than the other. If we want an honest, intimate relationship, how do we build a bridge across these things? Now, we have to be careful that we aren't going up or down. So we can go into like, the way I want to have sex is the better way, or what I want is the more righteous way or the right way. We have to be really careful that we're not doing that. At the same time, that we're not devaluing our position. So can I just hold the dignity of my position? So, like, this is what I think many women I work with could feel, which is, you know, I feel like you and I have bought into the idea so much that you have needs that I don't want to do anything to get you turned on, because then I feel obligated. And I hate feeling obligated in sex, because I don't know how to feel desire when I feel like I have a job to do. And so I wish there was more room to just enjoy each other without feeling like it must turn into sexual behavior, even to enjoy each other sensually and enjoy sexual feelings with each other without feeling like then I have to manage or take care of your arousal. So that might be something a woman would express. Like, mm-hmm. Now he might say, well, what am I supposed to do if I feel aroused? Like, I don't know what to do, you know, because I don't want to masturbate, or whatever they may say. And saying, well, I mean, you have to take my Art of Desire course to know these things, you know, but it's like, you know, a response to that can be like, I'd like to be a couple that's more able to just handle sexual energy between us, like as a normal part of our marriage, without it always having to move to gratification of that energy. I mean, that's where good sex happens anyway, yeah. Is when nobody wants to feel pressured in sex. People want to feel free, and they want to be able to enjoy arousal together without any pressure around it, because that's what cultivates more balance between men and women. Again, women want quality. Men are often the ones that feel desire more spontaneously. But when you bring those two together, you can enjoy arousal and cultivate deeper quality while having more sexual energy be imbued into the relationship, but not necessarily having intercourse. I mean, you probably will end up having it more because you're, as a woman, enjoying sexual energy more and feeling your spouse's attention and liking that, that you can have those. So you may desire to be sexual more, but you're not doing it out of a sense of obligation. And also there's no sense of like, I have to, or I should. I remember hearing an older woman say, my husband and I made love every night of our marriage. Sometimes we had sex. So that is that sexual energy, the connection, the feeling of enjoying each other, liking to be close to each other, didn't turn into any demand, but it was an energy that they cultivated and enjoyed as a couple that really enriched the quality and made intercourse a more natural part of their rhythm, but never something that was done out of expectation or fulfilling needs. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting because this is truly like the key to differentiation is when we don't make our differences a problem. And that's, I think, right. That's the biggest hiccup that I see is that people are like, well, he's this way and I'm this way. We're just not a good fit.
Yeah.
And they
yeah.
make it a problem rather than a compliment to each other. Like the reason, yeah. as you said, that we're together is because those differences are what attracted us in the beginning. And as I think about it, and as women, it's typically the women who want to change the sexual relationship. Most, yep. in my experience, most men are, you know, unless they're absolutely not having it,
yes.
you know, pretty content with the relationship. They're like, everything's fine. And the woman's over here saying, no, not really. So yeah, unfortunately, yeah. it kind of falls to us to be the ones to say, you know, this just doesn't work for me this way. Yep. And it's not because I'm broken and it's not because you're whole. It's because we're different.
Yep.
And I think for women, the biggest work is to learn how to be able to tolerate the discomfort of our partner as they're wrapping their brain around that difference.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That we want to kind of apologize for it or resent them for it, but not kind of like, you know, so often the kindest thing we do in our relationships is bring more honesty. Now, I don't mean an honesty that's about attacking or hurting or justifying ourselves, but we're bringing an honesty that's actually allowing the relationship to get stronger, to get better, to be more genuinely peaceful between two people. And so it means tolerating your own discomfort of saying something that needs to be said, as well as tolerating the discomfort of the person listening that may feel implicated in the idea, may feel like, oh, maybe I haven't been as good of a lover as I thought. Maybe you haven't been as satisfied as I wanted to imagine. But I also think most men in that situation, actually, like at least people that I've worked with will say, I'm really glad that she cares about the relationship enough to talk about it. I'm really glad that she said we need to deal with it because, you know, sometimes I felt lonely or like maybe she didn't really care about our sexual relationship. So I was just kind of putting up with what it was. But wow, she actually cares about it being better. And I'm here for it, right? So I think a lot of men may be at first be like, wait a minute, I thought this was great. But then when they realize, no, she's actually wanting something better, something more alive, they often realize they have wanted it also.
100%. And I think, I mean, that was my experience. And with my clients too, when I'll ask them to, or recommend that they ask for their partner to just, can we just make it about me for a while? Can yeah. we just help yeah. me to figure out sure. what I enjoy? Can
sure.
we just,
yes.
That's an exercise that most husbands are just all on board for because they do yes. want their wives to be happy. They do want yeah. to please them in that way.
And women are often more the barrier there because they yeah. have learned I should be service oriented. I should not be selfish. You know, a lot of women have learned that. So I'm actually very uncomfortable, like just receiving or just taking the focus because I feel anxious or I need to like earn it or give something back. I don't want to feel obligated. So it can be a real act of courage to allow that kind of focus, but very, very good for both of you. The other thing I sometimes tell women is don't try to give your husband pleasure. Take pleasure in him. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, never do you want to do something that someone doesn't want you to do to them, okay? That goes without saying. But too often we're thinking about trying to serve a need rather than enjoying their body, like taking something for ourselves. And in sex, there is a kind of greediness that's actually very positive. Like, I give my spouse pleasure. Like, my body gives them joy, gives them pleasure. There's a kind of self-reinforcement in it that we like. And men like that too. And when we get into the muscle of caretaking, it works against the erotic. We should never be in that place of, I need to take care of him, because it is antithetical to women's eroticism. Women like to be the focus of their spouse's interest. They like to feel desirable and that they are the turn on. But when they engage with their spouse too, to feel like, I don't have to give something to him, I can enjoy him, right? I don't have to take care of him, I can enjoy touching his body, being with him, take pleasure in him. I mean, it's just a better muscle for the erotic.
Yeah, because there's no, all of that Eros energy leaves when there's pressure to perform or pressure to create a result, right?
Yes, so exactly.
All of that potential for connection and for enjoyment goes out the window when it comes under that servicing.
Yes, exactly.
Or production. And it's just so interesting too how that can be such a different way of thinking about it for women who have been culturally perhaps, you know, taught to be demure and to be, you know, I don't know, more modest or more withholding, you know.
Yeah.
It's just difficult to help women to step into that, into their sexuality in a way that makes them feel very empowered and joyful, truly.
Yes.
Right. There's so
Right. This is so much the theme I take up in my book, which is that we've often internalized this idea that if you're really good or you're spiritual or you're righteous, you are denying, you know, you're either selfish or selfless. You're denying pleasure. That's the measure of a person's virtuousness or goodness. And that's just simply not true. Like, of course, we don't want to be exploitative or take advantage of anybody ever, right? We don't want to ever use pleasure in a way to harm ourselves or another person or to get away from our lives. We don't want to betray ourselves for pleasure. But there is lots of ways to relate to pleasure in a way that strengthens our souls and strengthens the soul of our marriage. And so pleasure, we tend to think of that, oh, that's bad. No, pleasure can be very, very good for us. Pleasure can be a way of feeling more joy, more deeply connected to ourselves, to our spouse. And so when we learn, like, there's actually room for me here. There's room for my desires. There's room for my pleasure. There's room for me to feel taken care of by my spouse as a woman. And that seems strangely to make us stronger, right? Mm-hmm. So by their fruits, you shall know them. Like, what is it that it's producing in your life? That's a way of measuring its virtue and what effect it's having on your soul.
And not all, and the opposite of that is too, how is that affecting your life? How are you feeling about yourself?
Yes.
Does your lack of intimacy make you stronger, more empowered, happier, more joyful? And if the answer is no, then we do have to pressure ourselves to actually step in and lean into the relationship a little bit more, instead of avoiding and hoping that, you know, it'll all just kind of smooth over and we'll age to the point where it's no longer
an issue
option.
Exactly. Right? Yes.
Yeah. So when a couple comes to you, what do you think are the top predictors? Do you notice, and I, because I see this in my practice a little bit, that I can kind of tell who is going to be able to go the long distance, who, you know, if I, what are the, the character traits or maybe those qualities that you're looking for that you know, like, if this couple can build this strength, then they're going to make it. Or if you see some, like, what are you looking for to, what are those predictors that help overcome these struggles?
Well, certainly if you have people that really are clear that they want something better and you have two people who are willing to look at themselves, you're golden. I mean, that is, if you are willing, if you're married to somebody who is willing to say, I think that's a fair point, I can see I've been doing that wrong, and you yourself are that kind of person, you can overcome almost anything. You can approach it and say, I need to be better at that. Or, yeah, let's try that. That might be hard for me, but I want to try that with you. Where I see people be less likely to build a bridge is when they feel tremendous amounts of resentment and hostility, and they feel justified in that hostility. Mm-hmm. And that is, they use their spouse's limitations to justify their own. And so they spend most of the time telling a story of why they're a victim and why they don't owe anything. Those couples don't tend to do any better. And my work is usually to unjustify people. Like, that is, to help them see you're not just, yes, those things hurt. Yes, your spouse did that and that was not good. But who are you in this, right? How have you either participated in the marriage to be what it is, or how are you going to take deeper responsibility for your life, even if in some cases it means leaving this marriage, but to help people get more deeply rooted into their own conscience, their own integrity, and their own agency to live in a way that they can back up internally. So sometimes I have two people that have that and they do well. Sometimes I have only one person in the marriage, and that's much, much harder. Because you can't really evolve the marriage. I mean, just doing something stronger yourself will shape the marriage, of course, and sometimes will inspire the other person to step up. But for a marriage to really, truly evolve, it does take two people ultimately who are willing to face themselves and give in a stronger, better way.
Yeah. I often, when I work with couples, I don't always work with both people, and often it's just with the woman. And I found this in my own situation too, that even though my husband and I had become very defensive, like, you know, we very competitive, both of us were college athletes, and like, we just have this competitive spirit, and that kind of, we brought that into our marriage, and we're often competing and didn't want to be wrong about all these things, you know. But when I could lean in and say, you know what, and I actually paved the way to show that it's okay to be wrong, that doesn't make me a bad person, doesn't ruin my self-worth, is the more that I could own those things that were true for me, the more safety I created for him to be wrong.
Yeah, definitely.
And so
100% that's true. Yeah, like, we're often saying, well, they never self-confront, but we don't realize that we ourselves are struggling in the same way, and we're making it easy for them to justify that. And absolutely, the more we can acknowledge, you know, reveal the underbelly, offer the olive branch, the more likely our spouse is to do the same, right? Because we're often creating an environment in which defensiveness makes sense.
Yeah. And I think when we're stuck in that rut and we're in that pattern, we also create some very bizarre behavior for our partner sometimes, because they're so defensive and so dysregulated that they act completely out of the character, even for them.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And so, like, if we can really be self-confronting, as you said, and really be honest about that, and you're 100% right, that intimacy and honesty go hand in hand.
Yes.
You can't truly know someone until you can be completely honest about yourself to them as well.
Yes, that's right.
So what do you think most women misunderstand about men? I'm curious to know, in your experience in working with men, what do they want us to know?
I think even men misunderstand this about men sometimes, which is, I think that, first of all, I think there's a cultural narrative that in some ways feels safer, which is that men are sexual machines, kind of, or that they don't bring a lot of heart or a lot of vulnerability. And I do think, if you just took women as a group and men as a group, that women are a little more sensitive to the feelings of other people. They're a little more tuned in to, so I guess what I'm saying is, men can look a little bit obtuse or like they don't care. And it's easier for men to talk about wanting to have sex than it is for men to talk about feeling lonely or unloved or unaccepted. But I think that many, many men feel deeply lonely, unloved, and unaccepted, and they don't know how to express that other than it's been 3 days, you know, like that is to say that it's a, that's a kind of ego protective position to talk about wanting sex. And I think they do want sex, but it's also about, I'm wanting to feel less alone. I want to feel that you love me. I want to feel cared about. I want to feel desired, that, that you want to be close to me, that I don't gross you out. Yeah. And so I think that we can misunderstand men's hearts in that and easily reduce it to some kind of just plain hedonistic pleasure. I also think men are misunderstood often for how much they will sacrifice for their wives and children to be well, and that they care very much about, you know, I'm speaking as a in general way here, but that most men will make a lot of sacrifices even for a woman's pleasure, right? So while many women have been mistreated at the hands of men, and that's something that is true, many, many more women have been partnered with men that really do want them to be happy, want them to be okay, want them to receive pleasure sexually, will make sacrifices even in the sexual realm for their well-being. And that this is a language that men often are more comfortable in, the language of the body, than women are. Like, women are kind of socialized to be in a self-referential perfectionism and easily feel uncomfortable in their own bodies and feel that they're not beautiful enough or whatever. And men are often like, you are ridiculously beautiful. And they really mean it. Like, they see the beauty in the feminine and they want to be received by the feminine and they want to be able to offer pleasure right there. And so I think it's hurtful and unfair to just reduce it to a hedonistic neediness. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's the real picture. And so I think that's something men don't talk about very easily, but I think is 100% true.
I could not agree with you more. I think it has been an unfair framing for men to put them in that box. And I think if you look at your own situation, to all my people out there, if you look at your own situation and you are honest about who your partner is, how does he serve you? How does he love you? How does, you know, looking at all of that, And recognizing too, yeah, that this is not a person who just wants me for my body. He does want connection. I think that's so important. You hit it on the head when you said there are so many men who are lonely. They are, and yet they're committed.
Yes.
They stay. They just don't know how to communicate what they're missing.
Yes.
Other than what you said, like, hey, you know what? I'm not feeling any love here, because for most of them, they feel that connection through the physical.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what do you say to women who say, well, he has physical needs, but I have emotional needs. He doesn't take care of my emotional needs, so I'm not going to take care of his physical needs. Mm. It seems to go round and round and
round. It does. Exactly. And you know, I mean, I guess what I would start with is both people there have a point. Like, they feel underloved by the other person. But if you're going to continue in that power struggle, you'll be there forever. You have to move towards the other if your marriage is going to get better. Sometimes I teach that Eros love is to step out in front. Eros being the life energy in a marriage, right? That it's that attraction. It's the desire for one another. And it requires stepping into the vulnerability of bringing your full self to another person. And that doesn't mean you neglect your emotional needs. You can still say, like, look, I want to have a good, and again, it's not about making excuses. So I'm not here giving you this line to justify, but if you really want to build a bridge to say, I don't want you to feel lonely. I want to have more sex with you. And I think what would help me is XYZ. It would help me if I felt you reaching out to me more. Sometimes I don't feel cared about by you. And that's an important aphrodisiac for me, is to feel cared about. So I'm not trying to say I'm not going to have sex with you unless you text me 4 times a day. But I think we're in a bit of a sex knot. Like, you, feel undercared for because we don't have sex. Therefore, you get busy and don't reach out to me. I don't feel loved. Therefore, I don't want to have sex. And then we do this over and over. And I just would like for us to both try to kind of come towards one another more rather than resenting that the other one isn't doing it the right way.
I love that so much. It's the blame game, back and forth, back and forth. And I think there's just so much joy living in that Eros energy. It's interesting. I was with a group of friends the other night, and I can tell where they might be in their relationships because of the way they're talking about their 100%. Spouse and how they are rolling their eyes and saying, oh, that's ridiculous that he wants this or that. And I just wanted to lean and say, wouldn't it be so much fun? Wouldn't it be so much fun to delight him in this way?
Yes.
If you could surprise him with something like this, 100%. Wouldn't that be just so enjoyable? And I think we just stub our toes over and over and tamp down that Eros energy. I don't know if it's just a pattern or a habit. Maybe we take in our cues from media about how to relate. And it's so off-putting to me because I'm in such a different place now in my life. And I so delight in my husband, but I see this lack of joy. And how do women step into that Eros energy instead of stubbing their own toes and withholding from, I'm not even sure what the payoff is other than it's,
you feel a hit of immediate superiority, you know, if you can just roll your eyes and you can talk to your girlfriends and they're like, oh my gosh, and I see men do the same thing in their own way, which is like, my wife doesn't do this right. And it's always feels safer to just get validation of other people that you are the good one and the other person is the bad one. And so we're very good at tempting our friends into that narrative with us. But if you really want peace in your relationships, you have to do the harder thing, which is pick up your half of the problem, deal with your half of the relationship being stuck. And so that always is harder because it's not just like, I'm so good and you're so bad. It's like, no, I'm not so good all the time. Yes, they do things that hurt or that I don't like, but I'm a hypocrite if I just focus on what they do wrong, and I need to deal with my part in the problem. So that takes self-awareness. It means willing to confront yourself that you can also hurt, not just be hurt, but then to go do differently, to surprise him, whatever, is to actually, it feels vulnerable to people because there is a vulnerability in it. And I mean, in a good way, you're saying, I want you to be happy. I'm willing to do something that turns you on, that delights you. I'm willing to let you matter to me. I'm willing to invest energy in you. I mean, it costs us so much to not do these kinds of things.
Yeah.
Like, because then we have to live in the marriage that's deprived of any joy. But in the immediate term, it's really easy to tell ourselves, you know, what has he done for me lately? You know, why should I do that? Like, we're so good at making the status quo acceptable, justified. But then we have to live in the consequences of it. And it's just, I've had so many clients say to me, like, why was I so reluctant? Like, all I did was start to invest better, bring a little more courage. And my life just got so much better. Like, I was such an idiot to be hanging out in the place of like control and fear.
Yeah.
Because it was a much, much harder place to be. Yeah.
100%. It's just not a satisfying, joyful place to be. I want to be mindful of your time. Any closing thoughts as we wrap up for women in midlife who are maybe just searching, wanting to create a better relationship? What are the first steps?
Well, I would say it's the first steps. It's self-awareness and desire. So, you know, so much of my content and especially my women's course is around forging a deeper relationship to ourselves. Midlife is a perfect time to get better at it because you've moved beyond some of those immediate caretaking tasks if you've been a full-time mother. But even if you've not been a full-time mother, like our brains kind of shift to a different place. We know ourselves better. We have more space. And it's a really rich time to know, to self-assess, to understand who we are, what do we desire, what is our part in not having it yet, and what do we need to face in ourselves to create that possibility? So, you know, that's often what I'm asking in my courses is like, what do you see is your part in the problem? And what do you need to do differently to make this better, to facilitate the possibility of creating what it is that you desire? So this self-defining aspect of our lives is scary because there's no guarantees. Maybe I'll desire it and my spouse won't. Maybe I'll do things to bring more energy back and he'll just meet me with judgment. I mean, there's no guarantee. But to self-define is also to find our strength, to start to respect ourselves more, to not just be in reaction to everyone around us, and instead face who we are and bring something better to our marriages, to our lives, to our souls. It starts with self-honesty and courage and doing something in a way that we respect more.
So good. And I think too, just not giving yourself the story that it's too late, right? Yeah, that definitely. We're too old to start. I mean, I've had women at their late 60s that I've coached who are working on these very same things and turning things around even that late in life. Yeah. So it's never 100%. Too late to start if you're just willing and you have the desire. So good. Jennifer, what have you got coming up and where can my people find you? Why don't you share a little bit about that? I so appreciate your time today.
Sure. This fall, we have a men's retreat. I have a couples retreat in St. George in November, a 3-day retreat where you can come with your spouse. And it's just an opportunity to look at, you don't have to speak up in the class if you don't want to, but you and your spouse are going through the content, looking at yourselves, having conversations back at your cottage, you know, to understand where have we gotten stuck? And how do we each play a role in creating sex worth wanting, creating something that we both desire? So that's in November. I also have a men's retreat, The Art of Loving, in November as well. And then you should just join my mailing list if you're interested, because there are so many things going on this fall. I'm doing like one day events. Because of the book and everything, there's so many mini things as well. And so if you get on the mailing list, then at least you'll be the first to know. So, yeah.
Okay. I want to put in a plug for your Facebook group as well. Tell us the name of your Facebook group.
Well, Ask an LDS Marriage and Sexuality Therapist. It's a very cumbersome name. We can't change it. We sometimes want to change it, but after it got over 5,000 people, we couldn't change it. But anyway, that's just a large group where people come in and ask questions. We cull a lot of the questions that are coming in, and then I teach on a theme each month for free. So there's that. And then you can also just listen to my free podcast, Conversations with Dr. Jennifer, if this interests you and you just want to understand my approach more. So that's all free. But there's also other things at my website that you can, you know, courses and a podcast where I'm coaching couples and so on. Yeah.
So good. You guys check her out. She's got a wealth of knowledge for you. If this is something that you struggle with, she's a fabulous resource. Thanks again for being with us today.
Thank you.
So appreciate it. Everyone have a wonderful day, and I'll be back with more next week. Bye for now.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, we ask that you please rate, review, and share the podcast so that more people can find and benefit from Dr. Jennifer's work.